News, sports, weather from Dr. Bill Williams, traffic info from Kane, and one of the Gulf Coast's most familiar voices. It's Mobile Mornings with Dan Brennan and Dalton Arwig.
7 minutes after 8 o'clock on Mobile Mornings with Dan, and Sean is in for Dalton again today. We're going to start with this before we get to Quinn Hillier from QuinnHillier.com and the Washington Examiner. Pat Robertson.
Yeah, so 700 Club yesterday. Pat Robertson had, and I'll tell you this, we're not playing the whole clip here. We are sure as heck playing a lot more than most sources on mainstream media that just get the very end of this. It doesn't change the meaning of the end of this, but we have a little more of the clip of what Pat Robertson had to say about Donald Trump.
Because they loved him so much and he was so strong for the evangelicals were with him all the way. But there was something about him that was good, that God placed him in that office for the time. He's done a marvelous job for the economy. But at the same time, he is very erratic, and he's fired people, and he's fought people, and he's insulted people, and keeps going down the line. So it's a mixed bag. And I think it would be well to say, you've had your day, and it's time to move on.
There it is. Pat Robertson yesterday from the 700 Club. Time to move on, he says to President Trump. And Robertson was a big backer and a strong backer of the president, now telling him time to move on. Quinn, you write about that move on effort as well in the Washington Examiner.
Yes. Look, almost every respected conservative Trump-supporting election lawyer has said that Trump has no more path to victory. People like friends of mine, J. Christian Adams, who is the election lawyer expert, or one of the two or three of all election lawyer experts for the conservatives. He was the whistleblower on the Black Panther case. He's a huge Trump supporter. He says that Trump has lost. Andy McCarthy of National Review, who backed Trump on almost every legal issue in the last 4 years, he says a lot of these claims are bogus. The Constitution sets up a process. The process has ended. The process ended when the Electoral College cast their votes. And trying to overturn that now would be like that lawsuit of the guy who, by the way, sat two seats away from me in the Superdome, the lawsuit of the guy 2 years ago who tried to get the Saints-Rams results thrown out because the referees screwed up. He might have had a point, and Trump might have a point that there was some vote fraud, but there is a system, there are time limits, he has not proved a single thing in court, and it is time, as Pat Robertson said, it is time for him, for the good of the system, to go.
Well, what do you tell Congressman Bo Brooks and maybe incoming Senator Tupperville, who plan to challenge the Electoral College results on January 6th?
Well, first of all, they're actually misreading the Constitution, as people, I think Andy McCarthy was one, and several others have pointed out. The challenge that can be made in the House and the Senate has to do if there are multiple slates of certified electors. There are no multiple slates of certified electors from any state. This is not like the House being the judge of its own membership's elections, which itself is problematic, but at least it's constitutional. The House's job is purely to count certified votes, not to decide which votes are correct if only one of them is certified. In other words, Brooks and Tupperville, they might be well-intentioned, but they are off base.
So by saying they're not going to, I mean, they're going to, their push here is to not certify those votes, and you're saying they don't have standing to do, that's not that the way it works?
Yeah, they would literally be violating the Constitution and the statutes by pushing to accept electors who have been certified by not a single official in their respective states.
So lay it out for us, Quinn. What is January 6th going to look like? What's going to transpire on that day?
Say Mo Brooks will say that he is making a motion to accept alternate delegate slates. He then has to have in writing from at least one senator an agreement. Presumably that'll be Tuberville. When they have an agreement, then the two bodies will go into their respective chambers and vote on the challenge. And in both cases, both votes will fail overwhelmingly, absolutely overwhelmingly. And then they will come back and reconvene together in the House, and they will go ahead and count all of the certified votes, and Biden will be announced the winner. That's exactly what's going to happen.
Okay. Is that, if you look at it politically, is this good for Mo Brooks?
Of course it's good for Mo Brooks. It raises his profile, and it makes him a hero to the Trump fans in Alabama. And look, was there vote fraud? Were there anomalies in a lot of places in the country? Yes. Was this greatly expanded use of mail-in voting problematic? Yes, as I said, for months ahead of time. Have they come close to proving that enough anomalies and fraud occurred in enough states to overturn the election? No. That maybe there was, but they haven't even come anywhere within a light year, legally, of proving it. And you know what? Sometimes the system errs, but the system calls for time limits on challenges, and it calls for proving yourself in court. Trump has done neither, and the country needs to move on. And my point in writing a piece this week is, because Trump's not going to win anyway, every dollar spent and every minute spent fighting his fruitless battle is a dollar and a minute spent or wasted that really needs to be spent on planning to oppose Biden. Again, if you're a conservative like I am, Biden is going to come in there with a plan for the first 100 days, and conservatives need to be ready for him, need to have a message, need to have strategies, need to have tactics, and we're not doing any of that planning right now, and it's not something you can just wing. So we're wasting our time.
I'm going to ask this question for folks that I'm sure are asking this question. So because of just time limits and stuff, you're saying it's okay to accept a election result that you believe has fraud as part of it?
There's a difference between having fraud as part of it and having enough fraud in enough states to overturn the election, even if there was some fraud. And more than that, it has to be enough fraud in enough states that you can actually prove in court. And they have not done that. And they have not come close to doing that. And they've lost like 60 times, and they've won one tiny court case and lost 60, of which, 10 of them were big ones. It's time to move on. And again, we have 4 years where we need to be on the top of our game if for all of these people, myself included, that thinks Biden and Harris are going to push us in the wrong direction. We cannot get caught flat-footed by moaning and groaning that, oh, we think Trump won. We need to actually be able to fight them. We need to know what tactics to use. We need to know what issues to push. We need to know how to mobilize the country against what they're doing. We need to do that, and we need to start doing it.
Hey, Quinn, we'll pick that up on the backside of the break. Plus, pardons?
Yeah.
Presidential pardons? I want to talk about this as well.
Yeah.
Pardon me. You want to hear who's maybe in the lineup to get pardoned by President Trump? That's on the way with Quinn Hillier from QuinnHillier.com and the Washington Examiner. With Dan and Sean, in for Dalton on FM Talk 106.5. FM Talk 106.5. A great news source here along the Gulf Coast that is getting flooded with pictures of Steve Mnuchin's wife.
Well, listen.
Because of you.
Well, I'm
Sean Sullivan.
Doing my part.
Lighting a fire and running off.
That's what I do. And continue our discussion with Quinn Hillier from QuinnHillier.com, also the author of the Mad Jones trilogy, available on Amazon, right?
Absolutely available on Amazon.
So check it out there. I would just before, because I would have moved to this pardon talk here, but before we do, and some people on the text line had talked about this, and I was in a discussion about this the other day, that the losses for these challenges, weren't they in so many cases about not whether they were true, there wasn't a chance for a judge to look at this, it was because they didn't have standing?
Well, that was the big loss in the Texas case, was a standing.
Sure, but these others also, right?
No, some of them, a few of them might have been standing. A lot of them were unproven claims. You know, there was this one where they made a huge deal out of, you know, like 123% of people voting in counties, and it turned out they were talking about Michigan counties, but they were citing the numbers from Minnesota. I mean, there have been a lot of sloppy lawsuits filed on behalf of Trump here that just got thrown out of court.
All right, let's get around to, pardon me, so who are the people that are lined up or you think that maybe you think should be, or Trump one way or the other is about to pardon?
Well, I mean, there are all these rumors about who Trump might pardon. Trump has actually pardoned fewer people than almost any other recent president, but he's pardoned some very high-profile people that probably didn't deserve it, like Governor Blagojevich of Illinois, and so people think, okay, he's going to make a bunch of, you know, sort of sleazy pardons like Clinton did. But you know what? There are a lot of people who do deserve pardons, and I understand that Trump is very carefully considering some cases. I've argued on behalf of a Florida billionaire. Now, usually you say he's a billionaire. Why do you care about him? And it's true. A lot of the pardons should go to people who have gotten messed up by the system, who were very poor, et cetera. But that doesn't mean that if a billionaire was wronged, he shouldn't get pardoned as well. And this guy had what was basically an administrative crime about how he paid some of his workers who did extra work. They were employees, and then they also did extra work. And I mean, it was a victimless crime, and it was administrative in nature, but he served 8 months, 10 years ago. He is a tremendous philanthropist. He made restitution. He's done all sorts of wonderful things, both before and after the so-called crime. And yet he can't own a gun. He has trouble getting bank loans or getting reasonable deals on bank loans because he's still a felon technically. That's the kind of thing where somebody has a victimless crime and has gone way out of his way to serve the community that you should say, you know what, this guy's doing a lot of good. Let's pardon him.
Okay.
So I made that case.
Okay.
Name is Jim Batmazian, by the way, and if you look at the list of not just giving money to organizations, but him and his wife's hands-on involvement with charitable organizations, starting them from scratch, doing wonderful things. I mean, you know, it really makes your heart do good to see what these people do, and that's the kind of person that deserves a pardon.
Who doesn't and may get one?
Who doesn't? Well, I mean, oh, man. I don't think he's pardoned Manafort yet. If he does, that would be pretty bad. He's already pardoned Stone, who I didn't think deserved it, Roger Stone.
Mm-hmm.
He's pardoned Blagojevich. The rumor is he might try to preemptively pardon himself, which I think is against the constitutional scheme. But, you know, there are rumors he's got some cronies that he wants to pardon. I don't know about that. I think he's going to do the right thing, and I think he's going to pardon a lot of poor people that went to jail 40 years ago for minor marijuana charges. and who have lived spotless lives since then. I think he's going to do a lot of good, right things, and one of them would be to pardon Jim Batmazian, and another would be to pardon a local guy. And we're running out of time, aren't we?
Talking about Steve Nodine, right?
My understanding is there's about a 50-50 chance that our own Stephen Nodine might get a pardon, and he deserves one for the federal...
The gun charge?
Federal gun charge. And look, every gun owner should care about this. This has nothing to do with his girlfriend committing suicide, which, by the way, is what happened, and it's now been pretty much proven again and again. This was because he smoked a joint on the beach in Pensacola while he owned a gun that was under his own bed in Mobile. They charged him with possession of a gun while using a controlled substance. Now, that's a law that's supposed to get drug dealers using guns to transport, you know, major amounts of drugs for trafficking. This is a gun that was never used in any crime, never accused of being used in any crime, sitting under a bed, and because they were trying to put the screws to him for that other case, they said, oh, let's throw this federal charge at him. When there was a case in Virginia that was sort of similar to this, the Fourth Circuit looked at it and said, this is an unconstitutional violation of your Second Amendment right to own arms. And I'm saying, I mean, it should have gone to the Supreme Court. The Supreme Court should have said the same thing about Nodine's case, but it was too late, technically, et cetera. Nobody should have on their record a federal crime for a gun that is sitting there legally 90 minutes away from where he is when he, and I do not condone smoking a joint, but apparently that's what he did on one joint on the Pensacola beach 90 minutes away. That's not a crime. I'm sorry, and he deserves a pardon for that. He already spent a year in federal prison for that alleged crime.
Okay, so 50-50 chance of a pardon. What I mean, has President Trump talked about it? Do you know that he's seen this? It's on his desk?
Well, look, I wrote a column about both Batmazian and Nodine about a year and a half or 2 years ago, and I'm told through sources that both of them are being looked at, and that what happens is that because Batmazian is from Palm Beach County, which is, of course, where Mar-a-Lago is, et cetera, they know some of the same people in common.
Mm-hmm.
And again, gotcha. I've got sources, even though the White House doesn't particularly like me, but I've got friends, you know, friends of 30 years who have good access to the White House, and these are in the docket. Whether they happen or not, I don't know. The Batmazian one really should happen.
Quinn, out of time, let everybody know where they can pick up your stuff, including your trilogy.
You can read my work at QuinnHillier.com or Google Quinn Hillier and Washington Examiner. My trilogy, Mad Jones Heretic, find it on Amazon.
Excellent. Thanks again, Quinn.
Thanks.
Quinn Hillier, some people, know some stuff.
Yeah, and when I come back, I'm going to give you a little discussion here about the presidential pardon. Do you think this should be a thing?
FM Talk 106.5, Dan Brennan, Sean Sullivan in for Dalton Orwigan right now. From McConnell Automotive, Dolphin and I-65, Louis Arata. Good morning, Lou. What's going on, Louis?
How are y'all, guys?
We're doing great. So I know there's a lot of great reasons to get by McConnell Automotive. Number one, you've got the employee pricing, so I guess trade-ins are flying in. So new, used, you've got them, huh?
New, used, everything. I mean, we've got them coming in here. We've got great deals on used cars. Like you said, with the new car employee pricing, I mean, we're just getting trades. We're getting overrun by them. I just went back to the detail shop. They got 15 cars back there ready to get back up front. And got them all over the lot. Y'all can check those out online at McConnellAutomotive.com. Also, if you got any questions on them, call Gene or I at 251-476-4141. Pat mentioned Robert's name, the new car manager. If you got any questions on that, call him. He'll, on the new car side, like you said, we got that employee pricing. I mean, it's, you know, on some of these enclaves, there's almost $8,000 in rebates and employee pricing. And, I mean, we've got Buicks, we've got trucks, we've got Yukons, we got Yukon XLs. I mean, we got to get rid of them. So y'all want to come check them out? We'll be here all day today. Looks like it's going to be a beautiful day today. And, hope everybody be careful out there, and hope everybody has a Merry Christmas.
You have a Merry Christmas, too, Louie. We'll talk tomorrow. That's McConnell Automotive, Dauphin and I-65, correct?
Correct.
You also can, if you like, you can find out more about some of those cars. They post them online at McConnellAutomotive.com. It is 8:38. Dan Brennan, Sean Sullivan in for Dalton Orwig on Mobile Mornings.
Okay, I got a couple, two things stacked up here. First of all, something I mentioned earlier, and at the end of the 7 o'clock hour, just a note here. That there was a vote to decide who to put on committees, right? So Democrats control the House. They're putting people mm-hmm. on committees. Story says here, it says, in an early indication of which ideological faction of the Democratic Party will control the policy agenda in the upcoming Congress, a House body tasked with deciding committee assignments overwhelmingly voted, this was Thursday, overwhelmingly voted Thursday to deny Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, Representative AOC, a spot on the powerful Energy and Commerce panel, instead handing the seat to centrist Representative Kathleen Rice. The landslide victory 46-13 in favor of Rice by the House Steering and Policy Committee, which is chaired by Nancy Pelosi, was viewed as an establishment backlash against AOC and her willingness to publicly break with the party brass on key policy matters and criticize Pelosi's leadership. And so she got her comeuppance there. So, all right.
A little arm wrestling match
just
there.
Just pointing out kind of where, you know, where the power, even though still grabbing at the power. And yes, AOC and the squad, they make the headlines for the left, but let's just, and maybe one day they're in that position. But for right now, the power still with Pelosi. I don't consider Pelosi particularly centrist, unless you sit her right next to AOC.
Then she is.
But yeah, so there's the power play. All right. So
that's interesting, though.
Just a little something.
That's like top of the first. Here's your results here for the top of the first inning.
Little something.
Tells you something.
Yeah, and it tells you where the power still is, and that is with the fundraising machine that is Nancy Pelosi. All right. So Quinn was talking about pardons. Can we talk pardons here for a second?
Let's.
Presidential pardons. Okay, so presidential pardon or clemency, this can, first of all, only be given for a federal violation. That's one thing I see people sending, you know, text, and this person should be pardoned for that. And that it can only be on federal matters that the president can exercise the pardon.
All right.
Right? So they can, then they have to offer the pardon. The person has to accept the pardon, but it can only be on, obviously. So if it was a state violation, there's no presidential pardon for that because it's only on federal.
Okay. Does the governor pardon?
Well, governors can't pardon for state. I mean, other than turkeys. Both the president, I don't know where the policy is, but you know, the president has the pardon power of the turkey. So do state governors.
Yes.
They can pardon turkeys.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so that's where there's some commonality between the federal system and the state system, that in pardoning turkeys, that's something you can do.
Happy Thanksgiving.
And yes, actually, governors can do some pardons at a state level. I've seen it before when it comes to restoring people's voting rights, felons that get their voting rights restored by a governor's pardon.
And that's just one person making the call, and that's it? Like an official?
I'm sure, but they get a body of information before they do it, just like they do on the turkeys.
All right.
Okay. And we can go through, everybody wants to play the game. Well, this, you know, this person, former President Obama pardoned this many people, and Clinton pardoned all the Charlie Rich and all this. We can play that game, or I want to ask the question as an American, not as a Democrat or Republican. Do we need this? Is this the vestigial tail that needs to be dropped? I am a fan of what our founders did. I walk around here crowing about how genius our founders were all the time when it comes to questions. But maybe on this one, I'll throw a curveball and say, do we need the power, I mean, the power of a presidential pardon, without getting into, everybody wants to get into the whether President Trump can pardon himself, because, you know, you had, or can you pardon for things that haven't even happened? You
right,
remember, like Gerald Ford pardoned Nixon before anything even happened.
Yeah.
That's all in the nuanced discussion. I want to back out. We're gonna roll the little thing on the mouse back out. We're going to zoom out on Google Earth and ask this big question. Democrat, Republican, Independent, Libertarian, I don't care. Should the president have the power of pardoning? Is this a strange thing? Like you, now you can argue that these are going to be applied, like Quinn was, in places where the judgment seems wrong or it was overly burdensome. But is it a weird thing? Is it like a weird part of the system to have the presidential pardon? Like you've got all these checks and balances that I so appreciate that our founders put through, and the push and pull and the compromise of our republic. I love all those things. And then you have this, like, you have this whammy button.
Yeah, it comes out of nowhere.
Right? That there's all these things in the judicial branch that lead through this. You know, the legislative branch makes the laws, and somebody, they say, violates the laws. Judicial branch takes that up. They go through the system, and they're convicted of whatever, in this case, a federal crime, you know. And then all of a sudden, because remember, this is a system about the rule of law, not the rule of man. It's one of the things why from President Trump to President Obama and others in between, when I hear people get so into the person versus the policy, I worry.
Well, we had that with the Supreme Court nomination.
Yes.
And
you, it's a rule of law thing for
yeah,
me.
Yeah.
I, the Constitution is what I pledge allegiance to.
Mm-hmm.
I pledge allegiance to the flag, not to any person.
Mm-hmm.
I can't do that. Too much American in me. Right. And I want people to think about that, that this pardon power is quasi monarchical. You know, it's quasi like an emperor or a king would be thumbs up or thumbs down.
So it's been there
since the beginning. Washington used it. It's been part of our system.
You've been a close observer of politics and government for most of your life.
I'm
I
just
guess.
That fun. Yes.
You're a Stitch at a cocktail party. But here's the thing, Sean. When did it fly all over you that today, on December the 22nd, 2020, you've had it with pardons?
I don't know. I've thought about this over the years, and I often, I'm waiting for an audience, right? I'm waiting for a situation where the subjects come up so I can bring it up again. It's like the, you know, like I like to bring up the idea of storing the coronavirus vaccine at Dippin' Dots locations, but nobody, there's not a lot of people want to talk about it.
Nobody's biting on that one.
So when I get a chance to throw something like this out there that I'm all about, I do it. And in this case, is it a good thing? Is our republic better that there are presidential pardons? And this, don't think about President Trump here. This is nonpartisan. It's for the office, the top of the executive branch. Is should there be a presidential pardon where you have all these things to go through the checks and balances in our system, but then there's this thing where somebody can just say, yeah, that's gone.
The whammy button, as you put it. Yeah. All right. I've got some thoughts on that. 8:45 now. FM Talk 106.5 back in about 5 minutes. FM Talk 106.5, Mobile Mornings. Dan, no Dalton today, but Sean Sullivan is in. He's also going to be in for Midday Mobile. It's going to be a lot of fun.
Oh, yeah.
Well, you're going to talk about the Battle House Hotel and the award they got.
Yeah, I'm pretty excited about this. So the Battle House awarded America's Best Historic Hotel. And
I love that.
Which gets me thinking about the Battle House and the history from, 1853 on for the Battle House. And I bring the big guns. My buddy John Sledge, local writer and historian extraordinaire, is going to join me to talk about the history of the Battle House. That'll be at 1 o'clock during Midday Mobile today. Plus Todd Stacy on the show and a chance of Senator Doug Jones, a couple last-minute pieces of legislation that may be signed off on, one dealing with Red Snapper in the Gulf. He may be on in the noon hour.
Okay. All right. We're talking about pardons.
He's just getting me riled up.
We're talking about pardons. And to me, they feel a little hoity-toity, like a wedding invitation. It's like, hey, are you going to the so-and-so's wedding? But only somebody doesn't make the cut. All right? There's a line there.
There's winners and losers.
There's winners and losers. There got to be people that maybe they're still in prison. And they're like, I think he's going to do it. I think he's going to do it. And he does not get invited to the wedding.
He doesn't get clemency.
He doesn't get clemency, right. Clemency is when you're in the slammer.
I think I'm right. Clemency is when you're in. Of course, pardon's when you serve the time.
Right, right. But in any event, there's got to be people who look back very disappointed that they didn't get the pardon or the clemency.
Yeah, okay. So, and the text line here, and let me start off with this, because you asked me during the break. You said, who'd use it? Pardon's been part of our system since the word go. President Washington used it. Two people that were part of the Whiskey Rebellion here in the fledgling Republic, he pardoned them, and there's been pardons on through the system. I'm just asking if it's still – it just seems like a weird part to me on this, the pardons. And this texter says presidential pardon should be limited but necessary for errors in our not perfect justice system.
Well, so I like that.
So what do you think? You think it still should be part of the system? You're pro pardon?
I would say they put it best.
You're pro pardon. Call yourself what you are. You're pro pardon.
I'm pro pardon in the context that
pardon partisan. You're a partisan pardoner.
I want to go to the wedding. I want someone to invite me.
I know you do. I know you do. And you're going to get invited. Trust me.
I'm going to get David on the line right now. David in Mobile. Good morning, David.
Hey, Dan. Hey, Sean. First, on the Battle House Hotel, if you really want to get a good history of the antebellum period at the Battle House, Dr. Harriet M. Doss out of UAB is a really good resource.
But the problem is they're not a Mobilian. So.
She is actually born and raised in Mobile.
But why'd she move up there?
Because to teach history.
My man John Sledge is my homeboy, and so he will be leadoff batter in the 1 o'clock hour.
Anyway, real quickly, on presidential pardons, Sean, I'm going to disagree with you. I know you like people disagreeing with you.
I love it.
I believe it is a necessary check and balance within the constitutional system to a check and balance on an overzealous judicial system, kind of like how you get convicted of a crime, you get your Second Amendment right taken away for smoking a joint 90 miles away from where your gun is. The pardon is a check on that to correct that. But most of fair-minded people would agree is wrong.
Is that the way it's proactive? If we're going to really do it, and you're going to right the wrongs of an overzealous judicial system, shouldn't it be done before the person gets thrown in a hotel gray bar, before they go behind bars? I mean, if we're really going to use this to make right, shouldn't this this whammy button that the president has be able to be used when they convict somebody and they say the president steps in? Nope, you're not going to jail. You're pardoned. It's often used in a posthumous manner.
I understand what you're saying, but Sean, that in a perfect world, you'd be correct, but we don't live in a perfect world. And to trumpet a very famous founding father, if we have to have a few corrupt pardons to have a good to have that check and balance in place, then so be it. Kind of like how Benjamin Franklin said, if it's better for a few guilty men to go free than one innocent man to spend a day in jail.
Right, which is one of, and agreeing with Benji on that has gotten me so much flack over the years, so much flack that it's been repeated, of course, and been quoted like David's talking about. Benjamin Franklin basically saying it's, the cost of having a few guilty people go free is worthwhile versus having an innocent person convicted.
It's a great quote.
It's a tough one, though. It gives people don't like it.
No.
It gives them agita.
I can see that.
Oh, my gosh, you can't say that.
I can see that.
I've said that before with my discussions with the death penalty, another unpopular opinion of mine. And people have said, well, you know what? If a few innocent people are sentenced to death, it's better than, it's okay. It's a tolerable thing because we're using it against guilty people. And I'm like, unless you're the innocent person.
Or know the innocent person.
Yeah.
Care about the innocent person.
I mean,
I completely understand that. So this, where are you sitting right now? I'm still not clear where you are.
What, on the presidential pardon?
Yeah.
I'm just asking the question.
I've declared.
Is this something that should, yes, you've declared. I'm just asking the question, is this something that should still be part of our system? Do we need, so David believes we need the presidential pardon as this check valve to a overly zealous judicial system. My question is, giving that power, that is like a monarchical power, right? I mean, the power of the pardon,
it's number one.
You know, Henry VIII, thumbs up or thumbs down as he's, you know, eating some mutton, run down his beard. The American in me does not like that. I'm telling you.
So we're talking about theoretically how the pardon should be used. Is that the way it is used?
I think you can go through and parse. This is not even me parsing out. Like I said at the beginning of this is for all parties. Mm-hmm. I'm asking this of the position of the presidency. It's not. See, often people will decide what pardon is right and wrong depending on their political stripes.
Right.
I'm asking the question. That's why I said we're zooming back out on Google Earth instead of being in the trenches here, asking the question overall, should the pardon be part? Is it a good thing to have the presidential pardon part of the benefits package that comes with winning the White House? You know, when you come in and you're like, okay, well, here's your salary. You were elected. You're commander in chief. You got that. You get this swank office here, and you got some people that work for you. And by the way, you get to health care, Walter Reed. You get this pardon thing, where you can just pardon somebody or grant clemency.
And do presidents by and large pardon only near the end of their term?
Have you noticed that? And this was asking David, if we're really using it as this check valve.
Yeah, why do you wait to the fourth quarter?
What would your reaction be if so-and-so is convicted? Now, take yourself out of it. It's so hard for people. Take yourself out of partisan politics for a second and just look at it that somebody gets convicted of something, right? And they're heading off to jail. And president comes running down. You aren't going to jail. You know, we could do it like a big reveal. Because I just pardoned you. You're not going to jail. You were convicted, you know, right there. Do it in the courtroom. As everyone, the long faces of the defense side and this and that. And the president shows up. Aha! Surprise, you're not going to jail.
You're doing the Trump TV angle right now.
Well,
that would be a
But that's what it boils down to, right? If you're going to have the presidential pardon, then why don't you pardon people before they serve time for something? If you're going to do right and there's an overly zealous judicial system. Now, I understand pardoning so people can get their voting rights back and their Second Amendment rights back and those things. But if it's wrong, keep them from going to prison in the first place.
You can't keep an eye on every case in the blooming country.
Then why do you choose this one versus that one? Jeff Four, he'll straighten things up next.
That's the question. Running out of time. Yeah. Boxed in now. FM Talk 106.5 and Dan and maybe Dalton. More than likely Sean again tomorrow.